Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
By the way, do not ever try to mansplain to Mary Robinson. It doesn't work.
He called her ma'am twice.
That was in the sentence where he said, I am the man in charge.
Yes.
I am the man in charge.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
That was
and
a
it
really
was, it was a gender equity event. Wasn't
yeah,
that?
It was. Yeah.
I thought so. Yeah.
This is Wicked Problems. I'm Richard Delevingne.
Dubai is more Blade Runner than Solar Punk, I would say. It dubs itself as a city of the future, and in some ways looks like the future if we don't do anything about climate change.
The way I describe it is sort of Disney World meets Vegas and the whole Spinal Tap thing where it goes to 11. But I will also say they've hosted a pretty amazing thing that it has been inspirational. This is my first hop. And we really want to scale the Lumisphere experience. We want to get partners. We want to get funders. We want to go global.
We need as many people as possible to understand themselves as active agents in the solution.
We are all in varying degrees stuck in this doom loop of negativity about the future and climate. And so the whole idea of the Lumisphere is to really change conversations positive and to shed climate anxiety.
There's a kind of emergency frenzy that also it's contagious, but so is the optimism. We have the know-how, we have the technology. It's really coming down to policy and political will. And that political will is going to come from more and more average citizens getting engaged.
Give Dubai credit where it's due. This COP is a mix of serious policy and passion with no shortage of spectacle. So we wanted to check in with some people on the ground at COP28 in Dubai who are trying to bring all those elements together in one project called Visions 2030, which is more solar punk than the cyberpunk of NEOM or other things associated with the similarly named economic development program in Saudi Arabia. Elizabeth Thompson and Chris Hayes are with Visions 2030 and joined us from Dubai just after hearing Al Gore speak. We'll have our conversation in just a moment. First, a couple of bits of housekeeping. Do sign up at news.wickedproblems.uk to get our newsletter and more episodes like this one with myself and co-host Claire Brady. We've got quite a few getting ready to make their way to you, from the optimism of Oxfordshire Green Tech's Hannah Scott to the warning of climate scientist Andy Reisinger trying to get policymakers to focus on the need to plan for an overshoot of 1.5 degrees. And if you stay till the end, you'll hear a new voice on the pod, a young and upcoming VO artist called Theodore Delevingne. For now, let's dig in. Here's my conversation with Chris and Elizabeth from Visions 2030. We hope you enjoy. I'm so delighted we could be joined from Dubai by two first-timers at the Conference of the Parties, my old boss and colleague Chris Hayes and Elizabeth Thompson of Visions 2030. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Chris, you guys have just come from the event where Al Gore has been speaking to Akshat Rathi from Bloomberg.
Exactly. Axios.
Yeah. Oh, it's Axios. Okay, so it's more than one event he's done today. Well, so tell us, the former vice president coming in hot to this COP, how did it go down in the room when you saw him?
I think the bottom line is that Al Gore's message was beating the drum of urgency. That's what it was. And anything that isn't urgent should be relegated. We need a full court press, but anything that has to do with considering things or possible this or possible that is, excuse my French, but just BS. And he was from the cop presidency to the need for absolute total focus to a real fossil fuel reduction. And he was very emphatic and emotional and just basically didn't mince words.
Absolutely. Just to add that I met him 20 years ago when I was running the Buckminster Fuller Institute. And of course, he's had the same kind of argument about what we need to be doing for a very long time now. And he was literally yelling this evening. He is the embodiment of the urgency that the situation calls for. I would just add to what Chris was saying was that he's a big AI geek, and he really feels like there is a huge promise with AI in terms of its positive deployment on behalf of really accelerating solutions to what we're facing, in particular as a tool to observe and monitor in real time the positive impacts of climate change interventions using digital. It has a clarion call for urgency, but he's also optimistic about how both the technology and the number of new people who are getting in the game portends for the future, but the clock is ticking in no uncertain terms.
This week, he's launched Climate Trace, being one of the ventures he's backed, and I've had a play around with it. Was that something that came up in his talk?
Yeah. I mean, that was really the preamble to mention it was the positive application of AI technologies is a kind of big accelerator for finding solutions.
To just maybe introduce to the listeners why you're both at COP28 there in Dubai is you are both working on a project called Visions 2030, which has quite a lot of AI in it. Elizabeth, can you tell us a little bit about your background and Visions 2030 and how you came to be working with them?
Sure. My background originally was in the arts and culture space, and I spent a number of years there. And then I had the great good fortune to run the Buckminster Fuller Institute for about 15 years. And after that, worked as a consultant. I'm sort of a cultural catalyst. That's basically what I do. And I was invited to join this new initiative called Visions 2030 that was really focused on developing tools and experiences to harness the artistic imagination that lives in all of us in some form or another to develop new models, new ideas, and get more people in the game of climate change. We prototyped an immersive experience called the Lumisphere at Cal Arts in Los Angeles in September, and it is a 3 geodesic dome journey that asks people, regular people, what do you want the future to look like? People go through a kind of emotional and meditative experience at the end of which they are invited to share what their vision for the future might look like. They do that in a tablet. The tablet is connected to software driven by AI, and instantaneously an image of that future that they have just imagined appears in a gallery on a screen. They then received that image in email and are invited to go into a fourth space in which they can talk about what they created, how they can integrate that into their lives and take action and become part of the solution.
If I could add to that, we are all in varying degrees stuck in this doom loop of negativity about the future and climate. And so the whole idea of the Lumisphere is to really change conversations positive, to get people more involved and to shed climate anxiety. So the whole idea is you go through this and you create an action plan. And the more that you act, the more hope you have, the less climate anxiety to have, and the more we'll have people, this army of people that we need out there to fix this problem.
So when I was reading the D-Zine write-up of the Lumisphere at CalArts earlier, solar punk was used quite a lot to describe not just that, but other installations that were there. For those who are not completely familiar, solarpunk being distinct from cyberpunk, right. Cyberpunk being kind of, I don't know, Blade Runner, kind of neon and rain-soaked streets and kind of really dark. And so solarpunk has a different vision. So maybe can you say a little bit more about that, Elizabeth?
Yeah, solarpunk really centers on optimistic views of the future, but has a kind of similar love of technology, but really is a kind of movement of young people more than anything. It has its own kind of visual vocabulary. It's really about young people harnessing the technology, harnessing their creativity to develop optimistic scenarios for the future.
Fantastic. And I suppose you're in the right place.
Dubai is more Blade Runner than solarpunk, I would say, given that it's a kind of, it dubs itself as a city of the future, and in some ways looks like the future if we don't do anything about climate change.
I have to say, I don't know how Chris feels about this, having he and I both, of course, have spent time in region, and there is actually a whole school of architecture and design called Gulf Futurism.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
But it's, I suppose it would lean more toward the dystopic, I guess, if I'm being honest, in a lot of its experiences. But Chris, I suppose a lot of people do find the area seductive. And I did see that even Michael Liebreich, the founder of NEF, now Bloomberg NEF, noted commentator and energy analyst, who couldn't resist the temptation to go to the indoor skiing facility there in Dubai.
Right.
So despite being somebody who would be very much a critic and a skeptic of a lot of these things, even he couldn't resist the opportunity to go skiing inside. So I suppose people get sucked in, don't they?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, the way I describe it is a sort of Disney World meets Vegas and the whole Spinal Tap thing where it goes to 11. And that's what Dubai is all about. But I will also say they invested all these resources to be this massive convener for the expo a few years ago. And the fact that it's being used right now and you have all these people here and they felt compelled, as we did, because we knew there were going to be so many people here, it was a good thing because you have the previous investment and there's all kinds of really innovative, diverse solutions here. So like my sort of message is that they've hosted a pretty amazing thing and there's so many interesting people here committed to fixing this. It has been inspirational for myself. As you alluded to earlier, this is my first COP and we're here for this sort of little micro solution that we think we really want to scale the Lumisphere experience. We want to get partners. We want to get funders. We want to go global. And it's been an optimistic time and we have a few more days here and we're looking forward to it.
Let's say a little bit more about the Lumisphere then. I mean, in terms of the project and in terms of what you're hoping for it, the experiences, I've seen some of the reactions of some of the young people who interacted with it at CalArts and seemed to get a lot out of it. I suppose, what are your ambitions and hopes to be able to bring that to other parts of the world?
Well, we would like to bring it. We'd love to do a national tour in the United States in 2024 and offer it as a tool for communities to begin a conversation about what kind of future they want. We see it as a kind of catalyst for a new kind of community conversation about what the future might look like. At the global level, we think it would be an interesting and effective kind of gathering space at big global events like COP, but also, if I'm going to be dreaming myself big time, Paris, the Olympics, the FIFA global tours. We really see this as an opportunity to take a census on the future from regular people worldwide.
Amazing. And I suppose, and then the AI enabling those visions to be turned into something that they can actually see and
that gives them agency. If you're part of the solution, then you're going to move forward and you're going to sort of shed that paralysis. The more that you're involved, the more that you see the future, the more that you're going to get involved, and the more that you're going to sort of shed that climate anxiety. And that's all. The more that we have, more people we have moving forward, the better.
But I would also just add to that, the participants who go through the Lumisphere create a visual record of what they want for the future. And if you can imagine tens of thousands of people creating a visual record, that is a very interesting data set that communicates about what regular people actually really want. as part of the rendering process of those images, people are invited to make selections between and amongst all kinds of different possibilities for the future, from continuing with fossil fuels to having solar panels on your house to eating organic to driving an electric car, etc. We are also collecting data at a meta level. We're not assigning it to individual people. We're very respectful of people's privacy, but we are collecting a kind of data set about what people actually really want. And we would like to be able to and see the possibility of being able to offer those insights to decision makers in specific communities.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very interesting. And so look, I mean, I think that sounds like it's going to be very interesting, and hopefully you're in the right place to have the kind of conversations that will enable some of that to come to place next year. You're certainly in a part of the world that values the kind of experiences that you're hoping to put on. In fact, I note that one of the big draws this year at COP has actually been this pavilion with Andrei Melodichenko,
right,
the Russian billionaire who's resurrecting woolly mammoths as part of restoring Siberia's ice age ecosystem, I see. Have you got a chance to go to talk to people about Lumisphere and how it compares to kind of I suppose you would have a ready audience?
We're going to hit the green zone on that tomorrow. But yeah, we've been at the innovation zone, the green zone, a variety of areas. This definitely resonated well. People really do want to move forward. People want to have positive climate conversations. They don't want to be scared. They want to look for solutions. And something like this helps to move forward in that context. And although it's not my sort of background, the sort of arts and culture angle to this whole thing really resonates, because there isn't a lot of resources in this area and more needs to be put in this area so that we get to more people. And there are more NGOs looking at allocating more resources to not only change behavior, to galvanize action, but to people, to increase action on climate. And that's the reality. That was Al Gore's message. We have got to act.
And I think the cultural sector, sorry, I'll just glom on here, Richard, but I think the cultural sector plays a huge role in how we're going to kind of turn the ship around in time. And one of the things that has happened kind of on the sidelines at COP is that there is movement afoot. 100 countries have signed a sort of petition, if you will, and it has been agreed upon to start the process, the formal process, to include the cultural sector at the table for COP 30. And I think that's a huge breakthrough. I think if we're not including organizations, institutions, and those aspects of the government that are responsible for the health and well-being and inclusion of regular people, we're not going to get there. We need people. We need as many people as possible to understand the stakes and to begin to understand themselves as active agents in the solution. And that's what we're trying to offer with this tool.
And so COP 30 is going to be taking place in Belém in,
yes,
Brazil.
Right.
And that's going to be, I suppose, an interesting one. Of course, you're at a unique one in that it's, what, nearly 100,000 registrants.
It's who are crazy,
there,
yeah,
at for COP
28. The largest.
Much bigger than ever before, and not to slightly discount, but also that 2,500 of those registrants are fossil fuel lobbyists there,
right,
as well.
Right, right.
So it's quite and we may not have a COP next year in the sense that if there is one, it might take place in Bonn.
Yeah, in Bonn, that's the default, apparently, yeah.
The fact, yeah, if so. I mean, so just, I'd like to come back in a moment, Elizabeth, to talk a little bit about the challenges and the opportunities for the cultural sector in dealing with climate. Before I do that, I can't pass up the opportunity just to get more of a sense of the mood. Mm-hmm. It's been quite a roller coaster in terms of some of the news flow that's come about the presidency, about some of the stories that have come out, and about some of the news flow that's come out over the first couple of days. We had the Secretary General speaking yesterday in response to some of that news. We had Jim Ski from the IPCC. And today, obviously, we had Al Gore jumping in.
Right, right.
So what's the mood? What's the mood been like?
Right. There's a lot of positive messaging here, a lot of positive people, a lot of positive announcements, and people just really working hard to advance climate solutions. So, for example, we saw at this adjacent event, not directly in the green zone, but an adjacent event in the innovation zone, the former president of Iceland speak, a really beautiful speech. And his fundamental message was, 25 years ago, Iceland was the sort of poor man of Europe. We were isolated. We had a horrible economy. And we fundamentally galvanized action, not really because of our belief in sustainable solutions, but we embraced them to advance our economy. But it worked. It did the right thing. And we are now a much better place. He also gave a variety of anecdotal things about some solutions from entrepreneurs in sort of isolated areas of Iceland. This one guy who recently just launched sold the first unicorn in Iceland for $1 billion, that basically his solution was all about cod skin mimicking human skin, and he sold it for $1 billion, and it's going to have all these different solutions. So his point was that we can do this, and if Iceland can do it, and if a fisherman in an obscure area of Iceland without a formal education can create an amazing company that will really help humanity, and then just sold it recently for $1 billion in a unicorn capacity, we can solve this thing. We have the solutions. And that's the sort of core message of Visions and the Lumisphere, is that we have the solutions. We've got to move forward, and we've got to be positive, and we've got to galvanize more people. Elizabeth?
I just agree wholeheartedly. That speech was so moving, and I can't speak for what might be going on in the Blue Zone, which is where all the national delegations are duking it out for the language of the statement that comes out of here. But there's a kind of a deadline emergency frenzy that also is, it's contagious, but so is the optimism, because there are so many people here who are coming from the political sector, the private sector, the social sector, who are all well along the way. They have advanced technologies the tires have been kicked. We have the know-how. We have the technology. It's really coming down to policy. That's one thing that I've heard repeated over and over again, and political will. And that political will is going to come from more and more average citizens getting engaged.
That's a good place to pivot to talking about the cultural aspect of this, because I think, as well as one political, let's just say, commentator in the States has put it, that politics is downstream from culture, right? So insofar as we're talking about the political barriers, not the technological barriers, to be able to make climate progress.
Right.
Culture has been something that's been a bit of a laggard, hasn't it, in terms of being able to deal with, in a creative way, the climate. We've spoken to comedians, we've spoken to dramatists, we've spoken to novelists, and it's something that, while we're seeing more of it, we often see things that either, you know, veer into really hard dystopia, or things that wind up sounding like a policy seminar, with all greatest respect to Kim Stanley Robinson, to things that wind up just being very hippy-dippy, and everything must be, we're all happy and getting along.
Right.
But I suppose we just don't seem to have got traction of something that really just feels like really compelling cultural product.
Right.
Is that something that you're hoping to address?
Yes, and I think if you look hard enough, it's there. It just has not been reported on. For anybody listening who's interested in contemporary art, there's an incredible website you can check out called Eco Art Space, and it's a database of extraordinary works of contemporary art by artists who have been using their platforms and their work and their practice to draw attention to these issues, and they've been at it for many years. But you're right, it hasn't been in the mainstream. We could spend hours and hours in a diatribe of, well, who's funding the arts? Who's funding culture? What are their interests? Where do arts and culture organizations have to go to get the funding to do what they do? It's all kind of a nested system of values in a way. But I think, having said that, the cultural sector has woken up, and it is an enormous force for reaching millions and millions of people. And we need them. We need as many different forms of communication, as many different ways in which to reach people
through their hearts, through their intuitions, through their body, through all these other forms of communication. And the cultural sector is, I think, a huge piece of the solution.
Well, that feels like a really good place that maybe we ask all of our guests who come onto the show to give us some thoughts about recommendations of things that they've seen, and you've just given us one example, or read or heard, that have shifted their mindset about climate or climate tech. Elizabeth, Chris, any recommendations you'd have for our listeners?
Yeah, I'll go first. I mean, because we're so focused on sort of this climate anxiety that leads to paralysis, leads to inaction, and we want to shed that, the Yale School of Public Health and the Yale School of Climate Communications has all kinds of really great information. From a sort of a daily perspective, I really like the World Economic Forum videos. They push them out on a variety of channels, but I get them via LinkedIn, and they're always really interesting. And it's about solutions, and it's about, sometimes it's micro, sometimes it's macro, sometimes it's about green hydrogen, or it could be about post-harvest loss, but I really find those compelling. And one last thing that I really haven't dug super deep into, but I checked it out earlier today, and the new data on climate.gov, which is a NOAA website, is like, their new version is super deep and has all kinds of interesting stuff. Elizabeth?
I would add is just sort of inspired by a panel session I attended yesterday, in which the emphasis was, the title of it was Think Exponentially. It was run by a very influential design thinker named Bruce Mau. And we need to build our own capacity to be able to think at the scale of the problem in order to imagine and dream forward solutions that are appropriate to the scale of the problem. So Bruce Mau's work, you can check it out at massivechangenetwork.com. That's the part of his legacy where all of these kind of design thinking tools and frameworks and workshops that you can participate in, books that you can buy, I can't recommend it more highly.
Fabulous. Well, listen, we'll definitely check that out and include links in the show notes. So look, what do you guys have planned for your evening there? I mean, it's quite, I suppose, it's reasonably late there in Dubai.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to sort of talk about the presentations earlier. They were incredible. We have a little planning for tomorrow. We're going to the innovation zone, and we're going to go to the green zone. We have all kinds of different panels to attend. Somebody else asking us to do another podcast, some other interesting forums in the innovation zone, but just really good stuff. There's a ton of people here. People are working so hard and so committed to it.
Well, look, I'm sure the other podcast will not be anywhere near as good as Wicked
Problems.
Richard,
I should have said, my first answer should have said, what's my favorite resource? It's Wicked Problems newsletter and podcast.
Excellent. And before I let you go, Elizabeth, you mentioned, of course, that you'd met Al Gore years ago when you were running the Buckminster Fuller Institute.
Yeah.
And I guess at the very end of his talk that you had a chance to reconnect. Is that right?
We did. He was kindly gave me a couple seconds in the mob that was surrounding him. His Digital Earth initiative is directly inspired by an idea that Fuller had called Geoscope, which was about creating, using supercomputing and the latest in data visualization to have real-time information about the metabolic flows of the Earth so that you could make better decisions and see the consequences down the road of your policy and technology implications of your technology and policy interventions. And this new technology that he announced today is part of that Digital Earth vision that he's been championing since he was vice president.
Well, I mean, this is hot off the press. The world will be hearing about this when this podcast goes out tomorrow. I look forward to seeing the reactions. Thank you both so much, Elizabeth and Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks for listening to Wicked Problems. And if you like this conversation, please share it and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps people find the show. You can subscribe to our newsletter at news.wickedproblems.uk, where you can also find more episodes of With Richard Dalvin and Claire Brady and all our show notes. And consider becoming a paid subscriber to help support our work. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. For now, thanks for listening.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.